Welcome one, welcome all, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 89, coming at you right now, ladies and gentlemen. This one is titled, I Have the Death Sentence on 12 Systems. Howdy everybody, I am your host, The Brant. And I am bringing you the Portal Gaming Podcast, which is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. And for more information, you can go to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Hello, everybody. Happy Memorial Day weekend, if you are in America. This is kind of our official start to summer, the feeling of summer as we kick off with barbecues and celebrations and picnics and boating and frisbee and all sorts of other things. Should be really exciting, so glad to get that here. I know as a teacher, getting to that end with school, of course in Connecticut, if you're not aware, we go pretty much through June, mid-June. So a lot of people I know are finishing now, graduating now, but we've got a little bit longer there, so I've got 4 more weeks that, but I am looking forward to this summer, jam-packed with Dice Tower Con and Gen Con and just lots of gaming and other things. So there's that. Hey, this episode, I am going to talk to you about some games I've been playing recently, as I always do. I'm going to talk to you about some want-to-play games that I'm looking forward to getting to the table, hopefully soon. And I want to talk about awards. And I really, ironically, couldn't come up with an awards quote from Star Wars. So I thought of, like, okay, I should do the throne room from the temple. But there's no word, so I'd have to sing, bum, ba-ba-bum, ba-ba-bum, bum, 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 or whatever. I started later in the song. And, my sassy throne room march. I'd have to do all that. And that didn't really seem to make sense. Now I did it anyway. And I tried to think of some others, so I thought, well, you know, a death sentence is kind of a non-award. but I suppose it's like he would have a reward. So Dr. Evazin gets the quote this week. There's probably 10,000 better ones that I could have mentioned, but that's what I went with talking about awards. I definitely think there's some irony there, and I enjoyed that. So that's that piece. Speaking of Star Wars, I know that Solo, the Han Solo story movie, comes out this weekend. I know there's a lot of people not excited. I guess Last Jedi really cut into some people. I thought Last Jedi was fine. I have not watched it a second time, not out of anything other than I am finding myself watching less and less. Kathy is super driven on Marvel movies, so we've been watching a bunch of those. We just watched Doctor Strange again and whatnot. So I've seen a bunch of those lately, but you know, as far as like finding movies in the theater and getting myself there, haven't been doing as much of that. But I'm actually pretty stoked for the Solo movie. I'm excited to see it. Yet I'm not running out the door to go see it. I'll hopefully see it soon. But so far I've heard good things. I've heard, you know, it's really fun. It's nothing amazing. I personally thought Rogue One was amazing. I thought Rogue One, they did an amazing job. And I don't know if this is any of the same people or whatever. But that really gets me excited for these standalone movies. And I guess now there's a Lando one. I don't know if that was a rumor or not. I'm probably spreading a rumor if I'm wrong, but I thought that that's what I had heard, which I think is maybe where they should have started. I feel like a Lando movie would have been more exciting than a Han Solo movie, but I guess Han Solo gets people to the theater, so they probably know better than I. Awesome. Hope you enjoyed Zephyr on the podcast last week. That was exciting. Hoping for something a little special for the next episode, for episode 90, as we approach 100. I guess that's a milestone. It feels like a long time, as I said a couple episodes ago. Like, people are like, oh, I can't believe we got to 90 or 100. Yeah, I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel like I've been doing this forever. I love it. It's not a bad thing, but definitely a lot going on there. So, yeah, but it was fun to have Zephyr back, and I think she wants to review some more games. She's definitely got some favorites, and if you just roll back the podcast a year plus, you know, 2 years even, listening to the games that she played, and hopefully some of the games you'll hear her play now, you can just kind of hear her growth for whatever that means. You know, whatever. If she wants to play Candyland, play Candyland. Just find somebody else to play. All right. Let's move on to games I have played recently. Let's see, I got a chance to play Istanbul not too long ago, and I had never played Istanbul, which I believe won Kennerspiel 1 year. This is a game from Z-Man and Rudiger Dorn, and Istanbul is a set of 16 tiles, and you have your merchant who has assistance, and you can move two spaces along a 4x4 grid, and then you have to drop off one of your assistants there, and you can do whatever the space gives you for an action. Basically, collect money, collect gems, sell gems for money, that's basically the two main things you're doing in a variety of different ways, increasing storage for what you can have. It's a race game. It's a race to collect 5 rubies. So in order to collect rubies, you have to go to the gem merchant or the sultan's palace, and you have to either show off the gems you have to collect a ruby, or you have to spend money to buy rubies. And there's a few upgrades you can get. If you get like multiple of them, then boom, you get a ruby for doing that. And everybody's kind of racing against each other. And then what happens is you can continue to move one or two spaces. And if you land back on one of your assistants, you get them back. Otherwise, you have to keep dropping them off. And after that, you have to go back to the fountain in order to, which is one of the tiles, to collect all of your merchants back together. So I got to play this as a 4-player. Yeah, it was fun. It was a cool game. I was actually kind of searching for our store copy, which I think we don't have a store copy. I think we have a Brian copy. Sometimes those get convoluted, and wasn't there in the store, so I think it would be a good one to have there, so I'm going to try to get us to track down a copy of this and get it in the store. I know there's a bunch of expansions, but it was really fun. Played a little long. We were probably in the, like, hour and a half to 2 hour range with Teach. But I find when you play in the store, you have a group, people are coming in, they're talking to you, people are going to the bathroom, whatever. You know, games are a little bit longer than if you played them at home, boom, 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 boom. It's probably an hour, hour and 15, which is a nice spot for this game. But I really didn't mind it at an hour and a half to 2 hours. It's not a high-level think. It's definitely a light Euro to be. It's more in the Castles of Burgundy vein. But it's a solid thing. You're definitely making choices and making decisions. A little frustrating to watch other people's situations work out a little bit better. And there's a few pieces I missed. So there's, like, upgrade tiles you can get. And this one costs 2 gems. And this one costs 3 gems underneath it. And I did not know that. So I snagged 2 gems. The person before me did as well. Then they grabbed the upgrade tile. And I didn't have enough gems, and you actually max it too in the beginning. You have to go upgrade your cart or whatever, and I couldn't do that. So that was a little bit of a frustration, but whatever. It's a first play. You learn that. You go, oh, that makes sense, that that's what's going to happen. And then you realize that all the costs go up when you're buying gems. The rubies, the first one's cheaper, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, it was definitely a thumbs up for me. I want to try this with 2. I hear it's, like, really solid with 2. I know it's kind of a predecessor for Yokohama. Yokohama came from this, and I wasn't as huge of a fan of Yokohama. Yokohama actually felt like there was even a lot more going on in terms of that, and I kind of liked the little more straightforwardness on this one. So I think from my, like, 3 plays of Yokohama, I believe I taught it, maybe played twice, I'm not sure. I feel like I like Istanbul better, but of course, 1 play and 2 plays, what does that really mean? But that is Istanbul. Then I got to play, Jason Perez, who does Every Night is Game Night podcast, and he doesn't like when I sing that, because it's the Lego, right? Every game, whatever, I don't know, everything is awesome. But it reminds me of that. So he does that podcast with Anthony, and Anthony also does Board Gamers Anonymous with Chris, and here we go, 6 degrees of separation. And I was listening to Board Gamers Anonymous, and Anthony mentioned as one of his highly anticipated games of the year, Epoch Early Inventors, and lo and behold, a copy of Epoch Early Inventors showed up, so Brian had a copy of that, so I got a chance to crack this open and play it. It is a pretty heavy Euro game. It's high resource management. That is basically your goal. The solo is basically a turn structure game. There's a dummy player, but the dummy player is really simple. It looks confusing at first because it tells you in round one, 3, 5, and then in 2, 4, 6, and then in 7, and then blah, 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 blah. But it totally starts to make sense. There is a grid of tiles that you're going out, and all these tiles are upgrades and inventions. And so you are starting in the village, and then you have to go out and explore the countryside. So all these tiles represent countryside. And then there's various things. You can upgrade boots. You can make a sled, a canoe. You can upgrade a knife, a bow, a fishing pole for fishing, and all sorts of things. All of your actions are controlled by food. So food is kind of a resource you spend to do actions. It's like action points, and you have to eventually take a turn to, like, go fishing or hunt or gather, I believe is the term, so you can find food so you have more energy to do more actions. And then you're trying to just collect a whole bunch of resources that you can then discard on tiles to create inventions. Oh, look, I just created a cloak. I just created a ceremonial knife. I don't know, whatever it is. And you create all those things, and then you get the tile, and now that will, or the upgrade, and that gives you status, as well as exploring the tiles gives you status, and you can now use that ability. So in the solo game, you're basically just moving a pawn out, so they move to one space, explore it, then they upgrade, what is the term? Invent, I guess? They invent that, whatever that space is, and they keep moving forward like that. And then, basically, they get to an end of the line, the tiles kind of go into, like, an X, almost. And they go out to a corner, and then there's a offering space, and they make an offering there and score status, and then reset and go in a different direction. And once they've done that twice, after that, you have three more turns. So I believe it's 19 turns after all of that happens, and that's how long you have to score your points. So I played solo, and it just seemed like I was getting crushed into oblivion, because it was really hard to get those inventions and have just the right things, because you can only carry 5 items. And so it's like, oh, this one requires 3 fur and 2 antlers and a log, and that's 6. So, but as long as you're not moving, so you have to plan to end on that tile. And so there's a lot of pre-planning and thinking about all those sorts of things. You can also drop stuff and come back and pick it up, but that element was a little bit clunky. I felt like, I mean, I like the idea that you're limited, but it was a little confusing to try to figure all that out. So I felt like I was getting crushed, but I guess I ended up making a good offering at the end that gave me a lot of victory points or status, and I believe I lost 50 to 42, which wasn't too bad, I didn't feel like. So I need to try that again. I really want to try it with more players. Now, there's one rule in the game that makes me really hesitant to play with a lot of players, and that is that on any of my turns, I can give a status, which is a victory point, to another player and use all of their inventions. And that just makes me nervous because that AP now goes through the... Well, is it worth one status to just use your canoe this turn? Maybe. No. I won't do it because I want to wait till a turn when I can use your canoe and your whatever. And so I'm going to wait. Oh, wait. No, I want to do it again. No, I don't. Oh, you have that? Oh, wait. Let me use yours. And suddenly this is how a 4-player game goes. Now, if you just ignored that a bunch, I feel like it wouldn't lead to that. But I feel like the designer put it in there for a reason. So I'm hesitant on the game for that reason, playing with a lot of people. So I'd really like to play it with 2 to get kind of that race feel. I believe it's like once somebody's made 2 offerings, like that's what the dummy player does, the game's going to be over. So your pace is a little bit more based on each other than a timer, a round counter. And that'd be interesting. So, but I liked it. I liked the resource management. I like what was going on. I like getting the upgrades. I guess it felt a little bit like, ooh, I want to have a couple more upgrades. However, in the solo game, you don't start with anything. And that's how the advanced variant is you start with nothing and you invent everything. But in the regular game, I believe you start with 2 tiles and their upgrades. And I think that might interest me more, to have everybody kind of uniquely have powers at the start. Of course, asymmetric powers. I love that. And just give you a leg up and kind of a direction to go, as opposed to, like, here's a sea of tiles, figure out what you want to invent. So I think it's kind of cool that they have both systems in there. There's kind of the sandbox, here's everything, and here's the, oh, okay, now you've got this, and this is your path, and think about what you want to do. So it might be nice. So it was a pretty fun game. The thing is, not very pretty. The rule book is not good. This is the game I was referring to last week that I was reading through, and it was so ironic to... mentioned that game when I was trying to talk about the positives of rule books, even though I do agree there's a lot of negative rule books. It's interesting to listen to the chatter about that, and there's a lot of negativity about rule books, and I totally get it. Everybody's kind of harping on that right now, for good reason, and I was just trying to bring to light the idea of, like, the rule book is not going to fix the game, or a fixed rule book is not going to necessarily be the be-all end-all from my point. And I do think there's a lot of good rule books. Just got Hunt for the Ring and reading through that rule book, and I remember a review where they said the rule book was terrible, and that was a big negative on the game, and I think the rule book is thorough. It's kind of too big. It's 46 pages for a game that's not that complex, other than the fact that it's 2 stages, but but I think it's pretty good. Again, I don't think it goes in the order that everybody would want it to go in, and it doesn't explain everything the way necessarily everybody wants it to be explained, but I don't know there's a one-size-fit-all. I'm not going to continue last week's episode. But anyway, but the rulebook for this game was very tough, and it comes with a setup sheet that's quite vague, so there are definitely some issues there. It's a pretty ugly game, and the resources are chips and cubes. So you're definitely playing a game of that type. So, thematic gamers beware! That's all I can say. But it was a pretty fun game. Got to try it with more people. The solo kind of made me feel like more like I was learning the game than I was playing the game. But it was neat. Cool! Then Harrison taught us this week, at the Portal, taught us to play Now Boarding. This is a game, who was this game by? I know. Tim Fowers. There it is. And it's definitely got that same artwork. I apologize, I forget the artist's name. And so Now Boarding is a cooperative real-time game where you are on a board and you are trying to get all of the passengers from various airports to other airports. And you're all working together. So what happens is you deal out a couple of passengers around the map of America that has, I don't know, I'm going to say like 8 to 10 airports on it, the major ones. And they're face down, so you only know where they come out. Then you put out some, then there's kind of just trails. Oh, it's 3 spaces to fly from JFK to Miami, or 4 spaces or whatever. And then you put out weather tokens. And there's a morning, afternoon, and evening phase. So in each of those phases, which is a deck of, I believe, 10, or it must have been like 12, 20, and 32 passengers, or something along those lines. It was divisible by 4. Changed based on the number of players. You put out these passengers around the outside of the board, and you reset the weather like every third of the game or so. And weather will make it like, oh, it's good weather, so you eliminate one of those spaces, so it's faster to get from JFK to Miami. Or, oops, it's bad weather, but from JFK to O'Hare is going to take a longer amount of time. And then you flip a timer, and you go, and everybody has a plane that starts out with 3 base speed or movement and 1 passenger. So you can pick up a passenger in the airport you're in, and you can fly your speed in spaces. You may end up not at an airport. And then you get to an airport, if the passenger needs to go there, pa-ching, you cash in, you get money for that passenger for getting them there. And if not, you can drop them off there to be waiting for a connecting flight. So this is kind of the key to the game is, ooh, I'll fly this person from JFK to Miami, and then you take them from Miami over to LA. And we'll work together as a team to get them there. At the end of the round, then, the timer stops. Oh, sorry, you flip all those cards face up at the start of the round so you can see where they need to go. Every passenger that's still in an airport gets a angry counter, frustrated counter, something like that. If they get to 4 counters, they are now a complaint, and I believe 3 complaints loses you the game. So you're trying to get passengers to where they want to be in a timely manner and whatnot. So at the end of the round, you then take your money and you can buy upgrades. So you can increase your speed, you can increase the size of your plane, you can get temporary, like a bonus seat that's cheaper, or a bonus speed for a round that's cheaper. The seat we played, you fill it, and then when it is empty, you get rid of it, as opposed to you jettison somebody, you know, over middle America. because you didn't get them there on time. So that's how it works. Then every seat you add and every speed you add costs more to be able to do that. And so that's kind of what you're doing. Your goal is to deliver all these people, not get 3 people who complain. At the end of the game, once all the cards run out, you get 1 more round to get people places. And then every 2 passengers who are not where they're supposed to be or are still stuck in an airport cause a complaint. So it's a little different. I believe we ended up with 1 complaint and 3 passengers at the end, which gave us a score of 2.5, which is less than 3. And we won the game, which was exciting. So it was pretty neat. It kind of grew on me as the game went, and I was understanding more. At first, we were putting everything out and then discussing it without the timer, and I was like, well, this is weird. But then I realized that every round you deal those cards face down. So it's fine to pre-plan what's there, and then boom, here comes the wild card of where are these going to be. But we started to kind of predict that, and we made little mini systems of like, okay, I'm good at flying over the West Coast, so I'll grab people from the West Coast. bring him to Denver, and then you bring him from Denver to, you know, DFW or over to O'Hare or whatever, and then somebody else will work the East Coast, and we were doing a little bit of that, but we were also just kind of flying across the country a lot, which might not have been the best, but we won, so of course we're amazing. And that was Now Boarding from Tim Fowers, and that is a real-time co-op. And then last, Gary Pope came and taught us Lords of Hellas. This is a new game from Awaken Realms, I believe is the company. And Lords of Hellas is a dudes on a map style game. And it is, you know, all of your ancient gods, Greek gods and myths and all that kind of stuff. But with like a sci-fi, sci-fi kind of element to it. So they've got like jetpacks. And they've got, you know, thick armor, and they've got weapons, and you're fighting, you know, monsters, so the Sphinx has, like, scaled armor, and, you know, all this metallic stuff and whatnot, and then, you can build monuments to the gods. Zeus, Athena, and Ares, I want to say, were the ones that we could build to. I don't think Ares was one of them, actually, so I don't remember the other one. Oh, Hermes, I think. And so what you're trying to do in this game is complete one of four objectives. So there's a big old map with colored lands. So there's a bunch of regions within a land, maybe three to four or so. And there's five different lands. And if you control two of those lands, every single territory in those, so, you know, somewhere between six and eight regions, you will win the game immediately. Controlling them is having a certain number of your hoplites, which is basically your army units, in a region, and then you control it. Then they can exit, and you continue to control the region unless somebody walks in there. You can win that way. There's monsters all over the board, and you can slay three monsters, and you win the game. And then also, there is these monuments that get built, and they're like four, I think they're five levels. And players can cumulatively or cooperatively build these monuments. And once a monument gets to level 5, there are three more rounds in the game. And at the end of that third round, whoever owns that monument wins the game. So that's kind of a neat timer that these monuments are just getting bigger, and at some point that'll end. And then the last one is players build temples around the board. And if at any time you control 5 temples, you win the game. So there's a lot of these just race element, all different things going on. So what do you do in a turn? Basically, you get a whole bunch of actions. You can move your hoplites. You have a leadership value. You have a hero. Your hero has leadership, strength, and speed. So leadership determines how many hoplites you can move in a turn. They can only move one space, but you can move 1 to 5 of them. Strength determines how many cards you're going to draw in combat. And speed determines how far your hero can move. There are also quests that come out on the board. So at the start of the game, you shuffle a big deck of, I think, events or whatever, and you put out either monsters or quests. So we had 8. We happened to have 7 monsters in one quest. So I started in the region with the quest, knocked that out early, and took over some regions up there. So what happens is, on your turn, you can move those hoplites. You can move your hero, whatever their speed is. You can pray, which is later in the game you get a priest, or it's not so later, within a couple rounds. And you can put a priest in one of those monuments, and you get priests from temples, which I mentioned before. And when you put them in a monument, you gain a bonus. So depending on the height of that monument, you get strength, leadership, or speed, and then you get either added units or cards or some other ability you can transport, you know, across the board or whatever, immediately when you do that. And then the last action is you can use artifacts. So artifacts basically get tapped, and then when a round is over, which is variable, you'll get that back and you can use that ability. I had a pretty powerful artifact to start the game, which was I could move any monsters 2 spaces, so I just messed with all the players. I started up north, and I pushed all my monsters south and kind of just let them wreak havoc on the other players. So that's what we were doing there. And then at the end of the turn, you get a special action, and the special actions are varied, but you can recruit units in every space you control. You can build a temple. You can draw cards or add hoplites just to where your hero is. You can hunt a monster, which is how you fight them and kill them. There's something else, and then you can build part of the monument. When you build part of the monument, that triggers the end of a round. So you could end the round on your first turn. And you pick one of the statues, you add a height to it, And then everybody removes their priest. You gain priests from your temples. Then all the monsters act. You roll a die and you get to decide what they do. So if you're ending that monument, you're controlling those monsters, which is what I kind of tried to do in the game. And then you get to draw an event card and it'll put a new quest out, a new monster. It'll evolve a monster on the board. Things like this that happen. And so that kind of controls the structure there of the game. So that was what was happening. I feel like I did a good job of kind of trying. I was trying to push everybody south and then take over all those regions. My hero had an ability that they can't move into my hero's region. So I was going to try to get to like the linchpin point and then be like, stay out and put key stuff and kind of defend my territory. It so happened that other people were going after monsters. Now, the combat is you use these cards, and there's basically two halves. There's a monster half and a fighting other people half. And so the monster half is the monsters all have, like, wound locations on them, and you have to hit them with a bow in the head, and you have to slice their leg with a sword. You draw these combat cards that match, and you gain rewards from doing that, and if you slay the monster, you get that victory point, and you get, like, a big upgraded ability. So it happened that I think Gary, like, half killed a monster, and then I went over and I was like, oh, well, let me do this. And I finished off that monster, boom, got that one. Then I ended up getting a card that was like, deal a wound to any monster on the board. And another person we were playing with managed to get a monster down to one more wound. There's these rounds, you get to draw some more cards, and he couldn't draw it. And so I dealt the one more wound to slay that monster. And then I was set up. I just had to go after a third monster. I had a handful of cards. I had a priest to pray to get three bonus combat cards, draw four at the start of the round, so I had these seven cards, and that thing that deals a wound to any monster, and I slayed the monster and won the game. And that's kind of how that went. It was like an hour and a half to 2 hours, probably closer to 2 hours with the teach. And it was definitely interesting. It was fun. It was good, but it felt like it had its kinks. Somebody said, you know, nothing really happened. Like, we kind of moved around the board and people controlled stuff, but there wasn't a definitive thing. I can see that. There was never really a clear goal. The four goals are fun, but it almost made it like, well, what's everybody doing? And I even went for a goal, but achieved another one. And I kind of stumbled backwards into the, you know, defeat the monsters. I would have liked more asymmetry and powers. I obviously love that. Oh, there was something. As people put temples out, you get these blessing cards, and everybody gets a permanent ability. So that definitely built some of that. Kind of think drafting, like Blood Rage. And so you're getting these permanent abilities. So that was definitely really interesting. I enjoyed that element. I would totally play the game again. I don't take these games as area control. They're combat. I move into your region with my units. We play cards. And the person with the most strength wins. That to me is not area control. You are controlling areas. But that's much more of a combat game than an area control game. Which is, to me, is a little bit more Euro. Yeah, so there was definitely some interesting things there. I had heard it compared to Kemet. I feel like I like Kemet better. I like that goal of just, boom, get victory points and fight people. Like, we all know we're just fighting. It feels more like King of Tokyo. Like, my goal is just to fight you. And there may be some sub-goals where I can score points as well. So a little bit more straightforwardness. But a second play with people who've played before, all that might be interesting to see where it goes. Felt a little bit like I could just kind of do whatever, and if, you know, two people mess with me, I'm in trouble, but if I stay away from people and they don't mess with me, I can build up strength, and could kind of suffer a little bit from that, but I did have fun with it. That is Lords of Hellas. All right, let me give you a want-to-play list, just some upcoming things that hopefully I will get to play and things that we've gotten in recently, and whatnot. So we got a copy of Lucidity from Renegade Games. I opened that up. It's kind of a horror-style dice-rolling game. Not really high on my interest lists, but it is there at the store. I hope to crack it open with some people, find some people who are interested in that. And that copy came in to the store. I guess I'm mentioning a lot of things we got as review and demo copies because suddenly just the gates opened. I used to be, I would ask, and people are like, no, sorry, not at this time. Totally understand. I say that all the time. Nobody owes me any games, knows our store any games. We've really been getting a lot of demo and review lately, and I've been working my way through those. I've been teaching them a ton, so I really feel like I've done due diligence to cover all those things and whatnot. So hopefully we'll continue to do that as we head to conventions this year. people will continue to support us, the podcast, through that, and publishers, and helping out with the store, because it really makes a difference to have a copy that we can teach people to sell the game. Speaking of review copies, got a copy of Scythe. I thought that would be really good to have in, so thank you there to Stonemaier Games. Going to be doing a review of that. I kind of reviewed it earlier, but I'm going to add another piece in here as well, and just, you know, kind of take a replay. That is a top 10 game on Board Game Geek, and my review wasn't quite of that, so I want to go back over that and see, and then and get this copy to the store. I think that'll be a great game to have at the store, so should be good there. Got a copy of Hunt for the Ring in from Ares Games, so I'm really excited. We're going to run this actually on Thursday, I think that's May 31st. I'm going to run a little event and have this there. Have some War of the Ring promos, if that appeals to people. They can have those as well. But I really enjoyed Hunt for the Ring. I believe it was my favorite game from PAX Unplugged, Hidden Movement game, so thank you there. And then games I'm looking forward to again, I want to play that Epoch game again. I think that'll be really good. I want to play Seventh Continent. So I think somebody's going to let me borrow Seventh Continent, so that should be really good to get a chance to play that. Hoping that Kathy will enjoy that too with all the adventure-style games we've been playing. And just up for, speaking of awards, a lot of Dice Tower awards. And so I definitely want to make sure that in voting, prior to voting, that I get a good play of that in so I can know where I stand with that. I really want to play Lorenzo Il Magnifico, especially with the expansions, and I really want to get Kathy to play that. I feel like that medium-heavy Euro is like her bread and butter, especially at two-player, and Lorenzo plays pretty well at two, so I think that would be good to do, and I want to use the expansion. I hear it really does a great job. Old games, Z-Man games, Pantheon, we used to play this. I want to play Pantheon again. I grabbed it from the store, and I relearned that. And it's a really solid little, you know, medium light Euro kind of action point game and card drawing and whatnot. So I really want to play Pantheon again. You can check that one out. I think it's an easily glanced over game that's actually pretty solid. Not amazing, but solid. And then last up, Food Truck Champion. This is from Daily Magic Games, and this is a Glory to Rome spinoff. And I love Glory to Rome, and I keep playing all the spinoffs trying to find that one, and it's still Glory to Rome. Amongst the Matai Nais and import exports and whatnot, but Food Truck Champion looks like it's got a good shot and a little bit friendlier of a theme, I think, for people. So I really want to try this game, and I have not gotten a chance to do that yet. So let me know what some of your want to plays are or what you've played recently. Oh, I'm staring at a giant box of want to play Gloomhaven. Got to get that back to the table. The fun part for Kathy and I is we know we can let Gloomhaven sit for 3 months, and we absolutely want to come back to it. So that will be happening. No worries there. Awesome. Yeah, let me know. Email me, portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com, or at Twitter, @portalgaming60, and let me know some of your want-to-plays. And now I'll roll into my final segment here. I'm going to talk about awards. So I don't want to go through the awards. Many of you know that I'm involved with the Dice Tower Awards. Whatever. I'm not worried about that at all. I probably won't pick what I think is going to win. Just out of, I guess, having some information from doing the nominations. I feel like I have a decent amount of information as to where people voted. So I don't really want to go there. I probably, with Brian, will go through what we voted for and just leave it at that, because I'm definitely going to vote for what I want to win, even if I feel like it was in dead last or whatever. And there were some games that I totally nominated, like Gaia Project, that didn't really get anywhere. And so I've got to redo my nomination vote. And yeah, there's a bunch of things there. Anyway, so in terms of that, so Dice Tower Awards I was involved with, I helped to do the nominations and whatnot. Spiel, Kenner, and Kinderspiel. Spiel des Jahres, yeah, Kinderspiel. All those all came out. I talked about those last week. I think I couldn't remember them all, so I didn't do a great job. But you can definitely look those up and see what they are. Origins Awards and the Heavy Cardboard Golden Elephant. So all of these awards are on the table right now. Heavy Cardboard is having HeavyCon right now, so they will announce the Golden Elephant winner. Then I believe they have the attendees there vote. There may be a Patreon vote as well. And they pick, like, a people's choice. Sorry, I don't know what the exact term is. And I know that's a Dice Tower term or whatever. Sounds more like a Dice Tower term. But they'll pick, like, kind of, you know, listener favorite and their favorite. So these are all the awards that are kind of on the table right now that'll be announced in, you know, roughly the next month or so. And I just wanted to go through, like, why? Why do we have awards? Why do we do this? Why do people find this necessary? Why do channels do this? Why are people interested in awards? All those kind of things. I thought what triggered some of this for me was the last Ludology podcast. Gil and Jeff were talking somewhat about this, and they were talking about Academy Awards. And it's interesting how you go with awards. Because if you think of something like the Academy Awards, they tend to look for artsy movies, movies that had a point, that have strong characters and acting, cinematography. Obviously, these are all great elements of film, so by no means are these bad elements. But they're definitely looking a little bit more for a diamond in the rough or a unique thing that they can award. Meanwhile, if you look at the box office, the ones that are winning are the big name, right? The big name movie. Everybody's going to see Infinity War and Solo, maybe, and Incredibles. And these movies that I know exactly what the movie's going to be when I walk in. I don't know. I'm not going to spoil anything for any movies. I don't know exactly what's going to happen. But I know in a superhero action film, I'm going to see superheroes with cool tech, with awesome powers, fighting to the brink of death, action sequences, cool music, loud explosions. And that's exactly what it is. It's not. I'm never going to go see a Marvel movie that is an art piece. The biggest stray we have from kind of the norm is Deadpool, that's trying to just be, you know, a little coarse, a little vulgar, a little humorous, break the fourth wall, do all those kind of things. But it's still in that same vein, right? It's a little older crowd, so it's not going to appeal to as many people. But these movies that make tons and tons of money, they're very mainstream. They're aimed at a wide berth of people who know exactly what they're walking into. Not like, oh man, I'm going to take a risk on this and hope my $10. But I guess there's this like movie pass thing. I don't even remember what it's called. But if you really watch a lot of movies, you should check it out. They talked about it on Deep End podcasts. You can tell I listen to a lot of podcasts. Anyway, so that's kind of what I was thinking for these awards and where we're going. And I think these all exist here. You know, I think Dice Tower kind of goes for that Wide Berth Award, as well as Board Game Geek. I think they're in this vein. Origins is probably there. Origins, of course, is a convention that's propped up by retail stores and publishers. So I think there's kind of a push to get people to, you know, realize the scope of what's out there in terms of everything. So I think they try to pick a broad range of ideas as opposed to kind of like, here's a bunch of really the best games, but here's a wide range of games. So to me, Dice Tower is going for that like popular award. What games are just being played? We're seeing them everywhere. You know, people are loving them, and we'll just kind of go from there. They're definitely the best games. I don't want to make that sound like they're not. I love Infinity War. I knew exactly what I was going into, but I love Infinity War. Then I think the other end of that is Heavy Cardboard. Heavy Cardboard is Edward and Amanda picking a game, a niche within a niche, right? You've got the board game hobby, which is already small, and then you've got heavy games or thinky games or economic games or dry euros, however you want to think of all that. And they are trying to pick out like a game that they feel best represents that niche that doesn't appeal to a wide berth. Last year it was 1822, a game that's barely in print. You have to order it from UK and it's, you know, handmade, but hand printed, and they only make 100 at a time. But they felt like this was the best game of that year, whether you have access to it or not. And so they're kind of, you know, to me, that's a little bit of more of that artsy award, you know, the Academy Award style. Awesome. Love it. I love this range of awards. Spiel is going for German games. They want a family game. So again, kind of that wide berth. They want something that's super accessible. That's where the rule book thing became an issue for them. Because how can we recommend a game that, you know, we're not going to be there, and then they're going to have to pick up the game and learn the game from there. We want it to be simple. We want it to be understandable, but have good decisions so they can understand strategy. And then we're limiting it to German games. If this game was not published in Germany, if the rules aren't intelligible in German, then we're not going to put that game in there. And then Kenner, you know, they went for the slightly heavier game. It's interesting that there's not really a heavy game in there, you know, in terms of like BGG weight, you know, 3.5, 4. I think that Ganshan Clever got, you know, 1.75 weight, and everybody was amazed that was a, you know, midweight game or whatever. But, you know, it's just, here's a next step. It's almost like a next step award. So we have all these things. I think it's great. I think there's all sorts of different reasons to bring out awards. I think it just brings awareness to people. It's a great starting point, right? When you give away the awards from 2017, basically those games are generally in public, in print, and you're saying to people, hey, are you getting into this hobby? Check out these games, or look through these awards, or which games have you played this year that you really liked? Is there a step from there? Last year you loved the thematic game of the year? Try the thematic game of this year, or, you know, whatever. So I think they really just, they bring light to some of these games. Does it help the publisher out? Absolutely. That's awesome, right? More people get to see the games. I think even, too, when we have awards, the awards bring light to the hobby. They say to people, like, oh, people are, like, thinking about these games. They're, like, doing podcasts about these games. And video, perhaps soon to come from the brand. And they're thinking about it, and they're ranking these games, and they're, you know, they're deciding what I should try for me. And, you know, it makes the hobby seem a little bit more serious or viable is probably a better word than serious. Like, oh, maybe I should check this thing out, play some of these games. So I really like that for awards. And then when you kind of look for that, like, very specific, it's like, hey, we want to really just talk about this game. This game was so good. It brought us so much joy that we want other people to know about this game. And if it's not in print, when we're doing that, you know, at the Academy Award, like, oh, if you haven't heard of it, go check this out. And I think another key is when you have nominations, there's even those games, right? If the game that wins is a game you don't like, it doesn't mean you won't like the nominations. And so I think that's a really important element of this as well. So that's kind of my thought on awards. And all those, I think they're great. I think it's fun to sit around. I think we can't get too caught up in, like, uh-oh, it looks like Gloomhaven's going to win everything, and I hate Gloomhaven, which I don't. I love Gloomhaven. Or Azul, or up this game, you know, Captain Sonar won last year, and I can't stand Captain Sonar, so these people don't know what they're talking about, or whatever. Like, whatever. Go to the year before. The games that won in 2016 and 2015 are still in print. They're still awesome. The party game, I think the party game from 2016 must be Codenames. But, you know, whatever these games are. So if I didn't like the one from this year, then, you know, kick back to the one from last year. And suddenly we have this catalog of games when we start giving away awards for years and years and years. You've got 100 games easy that are games to point to tell people this is amazing. You know, it's going to happen that a game like Gloomhaven is going to win a lot of awards. And I'm not saying anything towards Dice Tower or any of the ones I've been involved with or whatever. But they're going to win a lot of awards, and people are going to play them and go, that was a terrible game. That was no good. That's the number one game on BGG. Same thing happened to Pandemic Legacy Season 1. But that's how people feel. That's what it is. You may not like Gloomhaven. I think it's amazing. But the thing is, I'm never going to play it with you. No offense. I've played it a couple times with three or four people. Played a couple two-player. But I basically play that game with my wife. It's a game that the two of us play, and that's how that game is best. But I can't sit around and say, this wasn't the best game of the year because I only play it with my wife. That's not fair. Kathy's awesome. She's my favorite person to play games with. I love that. I love getting out and playing with other people. I love having people over my house. But when Kathy's like, yeah, I'm all in, she will ask to play Gloomhaven. That is just so exciting for me that we could do that. Or, you know, we get a night, you know, like maybe a Sunday night with Memorial Day off where it's like, let's play two Gloomhavens, you know? And we're like so excited for that. We're popping popcorn. You know, we line up a bunch of sodas to drink, and here we go. We're going to play that game and just have a blast. So, you know, it's just not going to be the same for people. But again, go through those nominees. I think that's so important. You know, cross out those ones you hate. I haven't played Seventh Continent yet. I may hate the game. Awesome. Cross it off. Go to the other nominees. Check them out. Go back to games from other years and check them out. And then something even, I guess I keep talking about Heavy Cardboard, but even Spiel would be this way, is like when that niche pops up for you, like, oh, I think I'm interested in heavy games. You can go and check out those awards in a place you not know. Or suddenly I have a family. I didn't know. Right? This is not my beautiful house. This is not my beautiful wife. That whole thing. But, you know, one day you have a family and you have all these people, or you're going to a party and they're looking for a good family or party style game that you're not used to playing. And you can go to those Spiel nominees and be like, well, let's try these out and see what's best there. So. Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's what I have to say about that. So Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening. Episode 89, I have the death sentence on 12 systems, which is probably the title or the quote that least ever matches. But somebody will go back and rank them at some point and tell me which ones match the best and which ones match poorly. And that will be fun to do. Have fun with that. Yeah, so we should have another episode for you. Episode 90 coming up next week. I think that's it. I think I'm out of things to say. 45 minutes of talking straight. That'll wear you out. So yeah, until next time, I am your host, The Brant, and I hope you step into the portal. Portal Game Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on May 25th, 2018. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Game Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Hey, thanks for listening.